Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them, and I tell you about them, and I'm so freaking excited about today's movie. But before we get into that, did anything scary happen to us this week?
What a great question.
Oh, such a good question. Emily, I vote you go first.
Okay, perfect. This week, I went to Palm Springs, which is one of my favorite places on earth. I love it so much. God, I love it so much. I love Palm Springs. I feel so good when I'm there. But this time, what was scary is that I need to become so rich. It's like I went there and was like, how do I become so fucking wealthy?
I have that thought 10 times a week.
Like disgustingly wealthy, like Palm Springs wealthy, like
vacation home wealthy.
Vacation home wealthy. Like, God, I love it there so much. And the aesthetics are incredible. It's so gorgeous in mid-century, like fucking everywhere. And Joel and I had like bopped around to a few furniture stores while we were there because we're looking for new furniture. And like, everything is so cool and so expensive. And then we went to, oh my God, we went to the Parker for drinks, the hotel in Palm Springs. Holy shit, you guys, have you ever been to the Parker?
Mm-mm. Yes. I think I stayed there one time.
Excuse me, billionaire.
I might be thinking of something else. I might be thinking of a different hotel.
Every now and again, I'll look it up to be like, we could stay there for like a night. We'll stay there. And I pull it up and I'm like, who do I think I am? It's so expensive.
Okay, I'm thinking of
it's like the most expensive
location.
Hotel I've ever looked into.
How much is it a night?
Because I'm like not looking at like the Four Seasons. It's like $1,200 a night.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't stay there.
It's crazy. Apparently, they do a deal in the summer in the like slow season that makes it like regular expensive. So, you know, maybe you stayed there then.
I can't remember.
It's so gorgeous. And we like went there just for a drink and their bar is incredible. It's just like the atmospheres you can create with infinite wealth. Like, oh, my God. And people, everyone there just has it. They just have money. And I want it.
Emily, here.
How do I get it?
Emily, here is the hard truth, though. Remember.
I'll never get it.
Remember the more. No. No, that's not it.
Well, I think that is it. But what were you going to say?
Remember the lesson that we learned from Squid Game, which is that if you have infinite wealth, you will ultimately end up just pitting other humans against each other to watch them kill each other for fun. Emily, there's only
that's
one path.
A risk I'm willing to take.
That's there's only one path.
I think for nice furniture, that's probably worth it. It's so hard to see something that you'll never have and to just want. I don't want infinite wealth. I just want enough wealth to like go to Palm Springs and stay at the Parker and have it not be like a year defining of expenditure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. God, it's very, very depressing. I just looked at like Craigslist apartment listings yesterday and almost had a full blown panic attack because I was just like, oh, I'm never going to be able to move again. Like I have to live here for the rest of my life.
Well, I've also dealt with that recently.
Like, it's awful.
It's brutal.
Things are so fucking expensive right now. And I doubt they're going to get cheaper.
No.
Although I wasn't paying attention to this. Joel was convinced that a couple at the bar thought that maybe we were famous because of the way they were like talking to each other and like interacting around us, which is very funny. And maybe the secret is you just act like you deserve to be rich and money comes to you, you know?
Honestly, I do think that's like half the game.
Act important. Mm-hmm. I saw in Dumois that Timmy Chalamet, had been staying there. He had been staying there recently. And so that in that moment, that's how I knew he no longer was, because if a real famous person was there, nobody would think that we were famous. You know what I mean? Like the energy, there was a famous person void that they were trying to fill.
Yes.
With us.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. Anyway, that's what's scary is how much money I want to have that I would probably never have.
Okay, so wait, I feel like I need to go on the heels of what Emily said, because mine is like the polar opposite, in the sense that Tim and I decided last minute to drive down to Maryland. We decided at like 10:30 Friday night to drive down on Saturday morning, because there's absolutely nothing else to do because of COVID and it's so cold outside. So it's not like we can hang out outside. Oof. So on our drive down, we stopped at a rest stop in New Jersey and I went inside to get us sandwiches and some snacks. And Tim took Silas outside to like walk him around and get him to, you know, get some time outside of the car. And while he was walking around outside, he was just talking to him and he was saying things like, where's your mommy? Why is your mommy taking so long? Where's your mommy? And this woman came up and was like, are you guys okay? Do you need a blanket? Do you need a ride? Are you hungry? Like, do you need somewhere to go? Like, are you okay? And Tim had to reassure her like multiple times they were okay.
Oh my God. What? A really concerned citizen.
A really concerned citizen. And I was like trying to wrap my head around it. I was like, is it because he was outside? I guess he had Silas like in his jacket. So it maybe like that was part of what was happening. And I think also the woman probably heard him saying that to Silas, but it was just like,
that's like a normal thing that parents say.
I know. But it was just kind of, it really threw me for a loop. I was like, wow, someone, first of all, amazing that someone was that kind and thoughtful.
People are very concerned about babies. They wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
They would not have cared if there was no baby there.
If Tim was just there, no baby going, where's your mommy? Where's your mommy? He would have been avoided by everyone.
She wouldn't have talked to him.
She would never have talked to him. Let's not paint this woman as a saint, okay? She wasn't talking to Tim for just no reason.
But it made me sad. Sorry, it's such a downer, but it made me sad to think about the people who really like do need help. And it is so fucking cold outside.
Yeah.
And there's a moratorium on the eviction, or there was a moratorium on evictions that ended like this week. And it's like, what the fuck are we doing?
Now.
Yeah, what the fuck are we doing? Like in January, that's when we're gonna end it. So I don't know. That was my sad, scary thing. Really uplifting. Sorry.
All right. Well, I'm gonna take us back up the other direction. This week, I started making TikToks for the TSDW podcast TikTok account.
Yes.
And Henley told me it would be intuitive, and it's really not.
Yeah, she's like, it's easy once you do it. I disagree. I haven't even attempted. You're braver than me, obviously.
It took me about an hour to make an 11-second video.
It's a good video.
Okay, to be fair, you saw the video I made, which I made in about 1 minute. And that's the level of like creativity and thought that I'm thinking about for TikTok videos, where it's literally just a video of a cat with music behind
it. That's true.
Yours were
I'm
way
thinking
more
too hard about them.
Yours are just way more complex and well done than what I'm doing.
It's a good TikTok. Everybody check
yeah,
it
everybody
out.
Go
yeah,
to
it's
our,
really good.
Go to our TikTok at TSDW podcast. And yeah, no, it was like keeping me up at night when I first started it. I was like, what TikToks can I make? So I'm thinking about it too much, and I don't like the way in which
it'll get you.
Now I've added a new social, because I actually didn't spend time on TikTok really before this. You guys will send them to me every once in a while, and I'll look at ones that are sent to me, but I don't go down TikTok rabbit holes. TikTok's one that I've like successfully stayed mostly away from. I'd stick to Reddit and Instagram.
That's true. You have Reddit.
I love Reddit.
Man, it would be embarrassing if you guys could know how much time I've spent on TikTok.
I mean, I spend a lot of time on my phone. I don't think it's that embarrassing. I think everybody does it. It's actually ruining my life. Do you guys ever feel that way, that your phone's ruining your life?
Oh my God, yeah.
I got
all the time. Always, I think everyone's feeling that way, right?
It's ruining my life. Yeah.
I need to establish some no phone days.
Days?
Well, like a day a week, I think so. Like maybe aside from texting, like to see if anyone's trying to contact me, but like maybe a no social media days. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's bad.
I just got my little notification that my phone usage is up this week.
I hate those notifications.
To 5 hours and 38 minutes a day. So
don't tell me that.
So everybody knows that's, you know,
what's
what is that?
How do I find out?
40 is that 40 hours a week? What's 7 times 5?
35.
That's a full-time job, folks. Me just dicking around on my phone. Makes me literally want to die.
In the state of California, that does not count as part-time. Part-time is 30 hours or less.
Also, another little announcement. We also started a Discord.
Ooh!
So you can, if you're into Discord, there's a lot of fun channels. We have a channel where we just send photos of the soups that we make, which...
A lot of good soups happening in that channel.
I don't know who wouldn't want to see that.
A lot of good soups.
Brings me a lot of joy, actually. So
it's fun.
Join our Patreon to join our Discord.
Oh, gosh. Join that. And sorry, really quick. Before we get into the movie, which we will, I wanted to do a quick shout out. A very, very big, lovely thank you to Ginny. Ginny S. I won't give your full name for privacy purposes in case you don't want your full name out there. But you know who you are, Ginny. Ginny sent us some holiday treats to our P.O. box. And oh, my gosh, it just really, really, it made me so happy. You guys haven't received yours yet because I picked them up from the P.O. box. So, Ginny, they'll get them. My card has Michael Myers on it.
Oh,
on
that's
it,
great.
And my love. It just really, it's like, what a day maker that was and is. Thank you, Ginny.
Thank you, Ginny.
Thank you, Ginny.
So sweet. Makes us so happy. And you know what else makes me so happy? I'm going to be really honest with you. You know what else makes me so happy?
Tell us.
This week's movie. And you know what else? It makes me so happy about it. I watched it in theaters. Wow. This week's movie is Scream. Technically, not technically Scream 5, but it's just called Scream, which I find a little bit confusing, but it's Scream. 2022 Scream came out January 14th, 2022. You can see it in the freaking movie theaters safely, if you dare. Sammy and I saw it. Sammy and I and correspondent Joel, I don't want to leave him out of the narrative. He's not here, but I saw a freaking scary movie in theaters.
I'm so proud of you. You did great.
Thank you. I think I did. I did better than the person in front of us who the whole time was like, oh.
I love it.
Hugely reacting in like a very specific way.
It was specific.
I've never heard those reactions.
Part of going to this movie, yeah, I was so excited. I was like, this is a perfect one to see in a theater. I mean, horror movies in general are pretty fun to see in theaters, uh-huh. but like this kind of fun horror movie is the best kind, I think, to see with a crowd. Like Hereditary is a little less important to see with the big crowd.
Yeah, that would be tough, I think.
So we all just feel shitty next to each other.
God, it was so fun to see with people. I had a freaking blast. I did do the thing where I looked at but just below the screen or sometimes at the people around me. And I did have a moment where the tension was really high. And I was like, Emily, this is a movie. Here's what they're going to do. They're building tension. Someone is going to pop out. That is going to happen. But you know that it's you can handle it. Like, I really wanted to watch it. Anyway, it was great. Spoiler alert. I freaking loved it.
I loved it as well.
I'm so proud of you, Emily. Honestly, look how far you've come. Just that thought process in and of itself, very evolved.
Thank you.
Seriously. Wait, have you guys seen all the other Screams?
I have not. I have seen Scream 1 multiple times, and I've seen Scream 2 when Sammy had it on in her apartment at a Halloween party, and I like watched bits and pieces. That's it.
Me too.
I have seen all of them, but I did not rewatch any of them for this. And listeners, as you know, we have not recapped 2, 3, and 4. So just heads up.
Yeah. And I would say I don't think they're not important. I think you could probably go into this one without having seen any, but certainly having seen the first is the only one that like felt like it was coming up.
Yes. It calls back to the first a lot.
Yeah. And like reference, you like know there are others, but I don't think they're important to understanding this movie. So,
yep.
Wow. But okay, let me give you the deets. Scream 5, directed by Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin and Tyler Gillett. Written by James Vanderbilt, Guy Busick, based on characters by Kevin Williamson. And it stars Nev Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, Melissa Barrera, Marley Shelton, Jenna Ortega, Dylan Minnette, Jasmine Savoy Brown, Sonia Amar, Mikey Madison, and Jack Quaid.
Ooh, I know that name.
Ensemble
cast.
Ensemble cast, fucking great cast. Everyone in it was so good. I'm going to need a whole year to talk about how fucking good Nev Campbell looks. Excuse me, miss.
She looks incredible.
I've seen a lot of memes of her like 1996 versus 2022. And it's like, wow, no change.
Like literally the same. Like, what the fuck?
Maybe better. Like better, yeah. 26
she
years later.
She looks so
later?
Good. And I'm going to come out and say I was surprised to find that I think David Arquette is hot.
Yeah, Sammy is sexually attracted to David Arquette. And you know
I'm
what?
I'm sexually attracted to David Arquette.
She's not wrong.
Did you feel that way in the first movie?
No.
Because certainly
no.
not. Yeah,
he's
okay.
He's hotter now.
He's
well,
hotter
also,
now.
We also know that Sammy is attracted to older men.
Older.
Older men more than younger men.
I thought for a second you were saying old, dirty men.
It's not uncommon for Sammy to be more attracted to the older version of a human.
And,
but
I mean,
she's
I'm
also
not,
correct.
I'm not happy about it. Like, I get annoyed. I get like, wow, how unfair that men just get hotter.
It is deeply unfair. And because
just say that Nev Campbell is also getting hotter. So
true. Some people just do get hotter, but statistically, it happens more for men. Statistically,
if you look at the stats,
I'm running the numbers and statistically more men get hotter. But it's just true. OK, it has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 60% on Metacritic, and a 7.5 on IMDb. It just came out, but the budget was $24 million. And in the first 4 days of its release, it's made $36 million. So congratulations to Scream.
That's great.
Yay.
I saw a lot of articles about like it. People are feeling good about the movies in this moment because there have been big box office opening weekends and Scream is a big part of that. People came out to see it. People
Hell
came
yeah.
out to see it.
They've done a really great advertising push for it. I've seen ads for it literally everywhere.
Everywhere. And the ads are great.
And I'm sure some things are like targeted to me because I, you know,
talk about like horror. But
it's also, yeah, I've just seen it everywhere. And the ads are great.
I also think like it is the kind of movie you want to see in theaters. It is. Everyone knows about Scream. It's got, you've got the nostalgia factor, but also people love a new horror movie. Like, it's doing everything right in terms of like being a movie that people would want to go out and see. But even still, it's like, it's great news that people are going to see it. It's great news for the movies.
It is great news. And listeners, obviously, we highly recommend going to see it. Go support our dear friend of the pod, Jack Quaid.
Dear friend of the pod, our close personal friend.
If Emily can do it, you can do it.
That's fucking true, man.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. I will say it is scary, but the right amount. It's super fun. It's like playing with you the way that Scream does. It is, I thought, and we'll get into it. The one thing that was harder for me is I think the violence was a lot gnarlier than previous, than like Scream 1. Like, oh, it felt like the 2022 version of that where they were like, yeah, you're watching people die. Like, they don't shy away from that part where sometimes I feel like the first Scream is like, stab, oh no, they're dead. Like, there's blood. But this time it was like, you're going to watch them get stabbed. It's going to be brutal. Like, it's still sort of fun in the way that Scream is, but I was surprised by how real the violence seemed. And I'm certain that was an intentional choice.
I mean, I think they get, you know, the opening scene of Scream 1, you see her get like, someone get like gutted.
That is true. That is true. That is true.
I think that was probably the worst death, though.
But for like slashery violence sometimes is like, it's so stylized, which this one still was. Yeah. But like, I don't, it just felt like grittier to me.
Or in slasher violence, you see like the knife and you see the action and you see them screaming, you see the blood, but you don't actually see like the knife, right, like inside of their body necessarily.
Yeah, you definitely do in this.
You see that a lot this time.
Yep.
And you see like, I feel like in my head, a stab is like it's so easy for a knife to, it's so easy for a knife to enter a body. It seems like, right? A sharp blade, it just goes right in. But this movie, I saw like the effort involved with like stabbing a blade into, like, it like felt like very forceful, which it obviously would be. That was the thing that really got me, is like, even usually like the quick stabs are easier for me to watch than like a beating or like, you know what I mean? Like, but like, this was like the stabs were like, I felt the like strength involved. It was
too realistic.
You have to essentially like punch somebody with a knife to like stab them. And I experienced that more in this one than I have in the past. I don't know. I just felt like, because Scream is always like playing with the fact that sort of slashers in general, like, don't you, like, you fucking sicko, you want to watch a bunch of people die, right? It's sort of like doing, and I felt like this one was really like, okay, what? So we're gonna watch, you're watching these people die. Are you enjoying it? Are you having fun?
The answer for me is yes.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
A little bit of trivia. I'll let Sammy handle it. We got some, friends, we got some super fun behind the scenes, direct from the source trivia from close personal friend of the podcast, Jack Quaid.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
The process of this movie. Thank you, Jack. So delightful for you to share some of that with us. Some things that I could just gather off of IMDb, though. So we'll go from there. We'll start there. I also forgot to mention in the cast, Roger L. Jackson, who is the voice of Ghostface. And he has been the voice of Ghostface for every single Scream movie.
And I feel like he's so perfect.
So perfect. We'll get to it. There's a line delivery that I almost fell out of my seat.
I know the one.
I've been saying it every single day since then, multiple times. It's so funny. But I just love that. Like, it's the same voice of Ghostface every fucking time.
Yeah,
it's an incredible choice. This is the first Scream movie not directed by Wes Craven. He died in 2015. They dedicated this movie to him. And I remember it being a big thing because the cast was like very hesitant, the original cast, to come back and do another Scream if he wasn't directing. And it was I felt a vote of confidence in these directors and their choices for them to come back. It did feel very true to Scream, I thought. Mm-hmm. And this movie came out on January 14th, 2022. Which is 25 years and 25 days since the original film was released on December 20th, 1996.
Cool.
Wow.
Pretty cool. That's all I got. You want to, some of our, maybe some of Jack's trivia will come at the end, but.
Some will come at the end. One that he gave that is just so great is that he said David Arquette taught them all how to paint like Bob Ross. Apparently David Arquette is a certified Bob Ross teacher, which is just so funny. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know you could get certified as that.
I guess you can, yeah. So he like had them all paint landscapes one day. They all sat in a room and he taught them how to paint landscapes.
That is amazing. That is why we do trivia.
That's hot guy shit.
That's hot guy shit. That is hot guy shit. Bob Ross painting. That's what women want. And I'm not being sarcastic.
Oh.
I want it. Also, I love, like, when you are, you've been successful, you're living your life, movies come and go, you're not, it's like, what do you do in your spare time? You become a fucking Bob Ross certified painting instructor and you learn how to paint landscapes. Like, I love that shit so much.
Jack also said that they played a lot of Secret Hitler on set, which is very fun because the whole thing is a whodunit and they're playing whodunits. And I've played Secret Hitler before and it's just a very fun game. And so
it's a fun game.
Picture that. Picture them doing that.
Picture that.
It happened.
Can you picture it?
The rest I'll save for the end.
Okay, great. It's, man, so we're going to watch this trailer. I'm excited to watch this trailer. I'm excited to get into the movie. I do think, listeners, if you feel like you can handle it, I know it's harder with a new release, especially in these times. If you don't want to be spoiled, go freaking see it. Come back and listen.
Yep.
Because the surprise element of the whodunit is always fun, and you're obviously going to hear it. We're going to tell you. That's the whole point of this. So, but I'm not dissuading you from listening to our podcast. Obviously, I want you here, but you just get it. Anyway, you get it. Let's watch the trailer.
Let's watch it.
There's certain rules to surviving. Believe me, I know. They always come back. The killer is a part of something in the past. This one just feels different.
You're all in danger.
Bob?
Where?
Sydney.
I've seen this movie before.
Not this movie.
You said we were gonna finish this. Go finish it, Sydney.
Scream.
I'll be right back.
He's dead.
It's so fun.
It's so fun.
They are hot. They deliver. They're so hot.
Are you kidding? Oh, right? God. Are you fucking kidding me?
It's I'm stoked to hear about this movie. Also, didn't know that the girl from Yellow Jackets is in this.
Wait, which one is that? Which
she's
one?
Jasmine Savoy Brown. She plays Mindy. Yeah, she's great. She's also in The Leftovers. Which she is also great in.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Whoa. This looks like a fucking riot. I'm excited.
It's so fun.
I will probably see it again, too.
I would like to see it again.
I like want to watch it again.
I was bummed
really
that I couldn't see it again before doing that. I like wanted to watch it again.
Yeah.
If it were streaming, I would have 100% watched it. But I'll go see it again. I'm in that AMC A-list, baby.
A-list,
I ain't gotta
baby.
Pay again. Maybe I ain't gotta pay. okay. Let's freaking do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look. We got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes, variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
I'll say that just about Scream 2, 3, and 4, all you really need to know is that there are always 2 killers. And in Scream 2, it starts at the premiere of a movie called Stab. So it gets even more meta. There's a movie within a movie that's based on the events of the first movie. And in each consecutive Scream, there's a consecutive stab.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's important to know.
That's important to know.
It's written by, or the events of Scream are turned into a book by Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox's character, the reporter. Her book about the events is what it gets turned into the movie.
Yeah, that's what Stab is based on. And usually the killers end up being someone who's either like obsessed with the movies and or the events, someone that's related to it. There's always like a tie-in somewhere. And so it's just referenced a lot that so much has been built on this same like original movie that they just keep referencing back to it. And then they're like, and then this sequel and this sequel. And so it's very like self-referential and self-aware. That's the whole fun of the Scream movies is how meta they are and how much they comment on horror movies in general. And yeah, and like tropes and that kind of thing. So, and then you don't need to know this, but in Scream 3, Courtney Cox has the craziest bangs in the world.
Wait, I do need to know that. I'm going to Google image it really fast.
You better. It's important.
Honestly, I thought Courtney looked great in this movie.
Yeah.
I thought she looked great. I thought she did great. I love Courtney forever.
She's a Gemini, so I have a kinship.
Gemini queen.
Whoa, look at these bangs.
The hair is wild. The hair is really wild in Scream 3. We'll post it. We have to.
It looks like a fuzzy black caterpillar is just taped to the top of her
forehead.
The
thing. It's like they're not even short straight bangs, like they're so jagged. It's so interesting.
They have like volume.
They have a lot of volume. Yeah. They have depth.
They're so confusing with the rest of her hair.
I just want a picture of her and Jessica Chastain from what was that movie called with Mama. Her mama,
oh yeah, mama,
with her intense black wig. I just want to put those like next to my bed and look at them every day.
Okay. But yeah, then the screams usually all start with a great opening scene, and this scream is no different.
Yeah, I turned to Sam. I remembered this as the movie was starting. I turned to Sam and I went, this part's going to be scary. And Joel turned to me and he goes, just keep in mind, this first part's going to be scary. So I felt very well taken care of as I entered this movie. Everyone was looking out for me. So here we go.
So we start with a phone ringing. Obviously, in the original Scream, we have the infamous Drew Barrymore scene, one of the greatest opening scenes of all time. This is a bit of a recreation of that. We meet Tara, who is played by Jenna Ortega.
It's like literally the same house, right?
It's, I think yeah.
I think it is.
And it's, yeah, again in Woodsboro, so same place. And she's texting with her friend Amber, their high schooler. She's saying, like, I got the liquor cabinet open, come over. And the house phone, the landline is ringing. And she answers it eventually. She, like, ignores it a bit at first and then answers it. Apparently she has an ex-boyfriend that she's avoiding or something. But she answers it and it is a man who I thought it was great the way that Roger L. Jackson does this performance. Cause at first we all know the voice. It sounds like the voice, but not exactly like it. Like he's talking much more in a friendlier, normal voice, but you can hear like this sounds like his same voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's screaming, the phone's ringing. So it is him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he quickly starts saying kind of weird things. He at first says that he's looking for Tara's mom, and he's a friend from group. And, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I'm not supposed to say that. And just stays on the phone like too long. So we know pretty quickly, okay, this isn't right. Because if it were truly a friend of her mom's, he wouldn't be like just chatting on the phone with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he eventually kind of reveals that.
He says, what's your favorite? Do you like scary movie? He like goes, which is what is classic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's asking her about what her favorite horror movie is, if she has seen Stab. And she says, no, the Stab movies are pretty bad. I like more stuff like The Babadook and Hereditary.
Really? She says that?
She says that. He asked what her favorite scary movie is and she says The Babadook. Uh-huh. She's like, I love movies that have like underlying themes about grief and yeah.
Really? That's so great. I love
it's
it.
It's very funny. Very cheeky, winking, being like, we're not about to have that kind of movie. Uh-huh. And he's kind of arguing like, oh yeah, like those, it's like so artsy, those movies, like I like the more back to basics, I like Stab. And he asks her if he like she remembers, you know, Stab's based on the real event, and I can't remember the exact turn, but soon she realizes, oh, like I'm talking to the killer, Ghostface.
Or some sociopath, yeah.
Somebody is fucking with me, and he says, you know, you want to play a game, and he's going to quiz her on Stab trivia. Says you'll get 3 questions, and she's like, I told you, like, I don't like those movies. Like, quiz me on The Babadook.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying he's out. He lets her know that he is outside of her friend Amber's window. He like starts playing a video of like, here's Amber, because he's texting her now from Amber's phone, and it's like, this isn't Amber, I have Amber's phone, and shows her a video of Amber. He's like, if you don't get these questions right, your friend Amber's gonna die. So now the stakes
are, so they're texting now,
he's on the phone, but she had been texting Amber, and it becomes clear that it's the killer also texting her, and it's like, and now on the phone he's like, answer these questions or Amber's gonna die. So that's why she has to like stay on the phone and answer the questions.
Mm-hmm. And she gets the first 2 right. I think she gets the 3rd wrong, because
I like that she gets the 2nd right, because she pulls up like IMDb essentially.
That's
of
right.
The Stab movies. Because it's also like, yeah, I mean, it's 2022, so she can fucking Google the answers to a trivia question.
Right.
And she does that and she gets it right.
And the 3rd question is, who is the killer? She says Billy Loomis. That is the Skeet Ulrich character. And she's like all excited, like, I got it. I got it. I know that's right. And he says, no, it's only half right. It was also Stu. I can't remember Stu's last name, but that's
Mocker.
That's Matthew Lillard's character. And so sorry, but you lose. She opens the front door. There's a fun gag where, because it's all like everything's electronic, she like locks the doors from her phone. So it'll be like all doors locked and then all doors unlocked. But she opens the front door to like look outside.
She tries to go to get Amber because she thinks he's going to kill Amber. So she's like, oh my God, Amber. So she like goes to open the door.
Ghostface is right there, slices her stomach. She closes the door. This is where she keeps pressing lock all doors. They keep getting unlocked. She's backing up into the house, into a like dark corner where we know.
You never back up. You got to have a wall behind you. You have to have a wall behind you.
Gotta be looking in all directions, aware of your surroundings at all times. Ghostface jumps out, gets her, stabs her like a lot. And
a lot.
She puts her hand up at one point. He stabs through the hand.
With that big fucking knife with a curve at the end.
Yeah, you know the knife. It's the same one from all of them. How do they keep getting that same knife? Have you guys ever seen a knife like that in real life?
I've never seen it. But to be fair, I haven't.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I bet if you look for it, you can find it.
That's true. And
steps on her leg, ooh, breaks her leg. You see it. It's
like
nasty.
Stomps on her shin. And you just like see and hear the bones break.
I think that's like two, like he steps in her leg and breaks it. She turns, puts her hand up, stab. Like the sequence of this first, it was so violent.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. Fuck, I hate this. I do not like this.
And I can't remember how it ends. And I guess we should say that because we've only seen this once in theaters, just an apology if we get things a little wrong. It's harder to do these recaps from just straight memory.
I think with the like alarm system on her phone that like locks and unlocks the door, she's able to alert the authorities.
That's right.
So I think we hear like she's like, the cops are on their way. So I think the killer like runs out of the house and then we just get like scream
title card. Yeah. Yep.
Is she still alive or dead?
We don't know.
TBD. Okay. Ooh, baby.
Then we cut to a bowling outside a bowling alley and we meet Sam and her boyfriend Richie, who is Jack Quaid. Sam is played by what's her name?
Melissa Barrera.
And they are boyfriend and girlfriend. Sam gets a phone call that her sister Tara has been attacked. And it's clear that they're estranged or are not close. Like whoever is calling her and telling her this is like, I know you guys haven't been close lately, but she's in the hospital and she's gonna make it, but like she's really, really hurt. And Sam is like, what happened? And the person like sighs and is like, some fucking guy in a ghost face mask attacked her. And it's clear that they all know what this means. This has happened
a lot of times. It keeps happening here.
move away.
Well, they are away. I mean, they're Sam and Richie are not in Woodsboro. They're being called like to come to Woodsboro.
Oh, okay.
I guess not everybody in the world can leave this town, probably.
Yeah, some people are gonna stay. Yeah,
they should.
Oh boy.
But so Sam decides to go back to Woodsboro. Richie says, I'm coming with you. And
they're driving back to Woodsboro and she's like, okay, so here's the deal. Have you ever seen or heard of the Stab movies? And he's like, oh, I haven't seen them, but I've heard of them. She's like, yeah, those are based on the events of this town. Those things really happened. The person who stabbed my sister is like based off these movies. And yeah, he's basically like, whoa. This feels like bad and stupid for us to be going there. But they get to the hospital and Tara is fine. She's been stabbed 7 times.
Oh, too many times.
Too many times. She and Sam and Tara have like a little, you know, I love you, I'm so sorry I left. Like they're happy to see each other. Their mom is not there. She's in London on work. That we get the vibe that like the mom is not super present in their lives. So sort of just the two of them. We are introduced to Sheriff Judy, who is familiar. She and Sam, I guess Sam left town when she was 18. She's 5 years older than Tara and like got into a lot of trouble before she left. The friends sort of are in the hospital room and they're like, oh, Sam's coming back. That's going to be trouble. She was a troubled teen. So she also, the sheriff doesn't really like her. They have a tense relationship. But Sam says, she's like, I'm going to stay. I'm going to figure out who did this to you. And I think Sheriff Judy is like, maybe you should go and like leave this to people who actually care. Nobody's very nice to Sam.
Yeah, not a warm welcome for Sam.
Not a warm welcome.
Harsh.
When do we have the scene at the high school where we kind of meet all the friends?
You know what? I think it's right before this scene, before they go
just
to the hospital.
Not a ton happens in it, but it's just to meet all of the friends. There is Wes. There's always a friend group. Mm-hmm. There's Wes. He is the one who called Sam. And there is Amber, who is the friend that was texting with her. And then there's the twins, who are Chad and Mindy. And Chad's
and then Chad's girlfriend
Liv. And they have a conversation that's, again, very aware of the history and aware that they should all be suspecting each other. It's very quickly getting into like whodunit and like them all pointing out like someone sees Chad has a bruise and they're like, "What? Where'd you get that bruise?" And he's like, "I got it at football practice." And like very quickly, they're all suspicious of each other, half joking and half like, "But we should be asking these questions." Like, we have reason to be suspicious.
They all know the deal, and they're like, it's usually someone in the friend group. It's probably one of us. Is it you? I don't know. I don't trust you. And but they're like friends, but they also, yeah, one of them is probably one of us.
And they're like, Mindy is like a rude to Liv. She's like, it's not Liv. Liv's too stupid. And then at some point, Liv's ex pulls up in a car, like a muscle car, and it looks like an older guy, like college, or honestly he looked older than that.
He looked old.
But not old enough for me to find him hot.
Right.
Good. That's the cutoff.
Older than them, younger than us.
And his name's Vince, and they all kind of give him a dirty look, like, okay, well, what's this guy's deal? Like, he's just like looking like a creep, so he seems suspicious too. And yeah, then at the hospital, Sam is feeling like attacked by everybody. And there's a part where she goes into a room by herself to like get away from everybody. It's like the little kitchen area or something.
I think she takes her medication. She's like medication, like pills that she's taking throughout.
Yep.
This as well.
Mark your bingos. And as she's looking at herself in the mirror, who pops up behind her but Skeet freaking Ulrich, Billy Loomis.
Wait, what?
And it's like her hallucination, and we don't like totally know what's going on yet, but it's clear that he's like not alive. It's like a what do you call a CGI version, so that he looks like younger.
It's not at his normal age. It is Skeet Ulrich currently doing it, but they age him down to look like he does at the end of Scream 1. He's like got stab marks.
Yeah, he's in the white shirt with blood all over it.
He dies at the end of Scream 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sidney Prescott, Neve Campbell's character, kills him. He says something like, "When are you going to tell her why this is happening?"
Mm-hmm. Oh, when
she says
no.
to Sam. Yeah.
Sam, what do you know, Sam? What do you know?
Then Sam goes in and does tell her right now, right?
Oh.
Well, Sam gets attacked.
Oh, yes. Okay. First, Sam gets attacked
by Ghostface.
Ghostface is in the room. Oh, no. He calls her and, sorry. Okay. So she's in the room and gets a call from, again, the scary voice, Ghostface, and is like, "You want me, motherfucker? Like, I'm here. Come and get me." And he's like, "Okay." And he's right there and attacks her. She is able to defend herself with like some chairs in the room.
She screams for help. She's in a, you know, full hospital.
She's in a full hospital. And so then is able to run out into the main area. Ghostface does not follow because there's too many people around. And she's screaming, freaking out. "He's here. I just got attacked. They ask for more officers to come and protect the room. And then she goes in to talk to Tara. And this is, I think, where she tells why this is happening.
Just to clarify, Ghostface is in full Ghostface regalia. Like, he's wearing the full black. It's such an ostentatious murder outfit. It's so funny.
It's really so deeply fun.
At least like Michael Myers, like you could kind of see him blending in to the background and stuff like that. But like Ghostface, it's crazy. Unless it's Halloween.
But it's easy to pull on and off, I'd say.
That's true. It's accessible.
It's like essentially a big cape with a mask in the front.
Yeah, but if I was living in this town where this man kept murdering people, or someone in this outfit kept murdering people, if I saw that, I would be like calling the police immediately. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
go on.
That's why he's got to be so sneaky. I mean, people don't see him.
He's so fast. So fast.
Okay. So Sam asks to, or Sam goes back into the room with Tara. Richie is in the corner on his phone. She says, "What are you doing?" He's like, "He's watching stab movies." She's like, "Are you joking?" He's like, "No, I like want to know what we're dealing with. Like, I don't know what's happening." And she asks for people to clear the room. She tells Sheriff Judy, bring more backup. We need more protection here. And she's like, I want to talk to Tara alone. And this is where she reveals that the reason she left 5 years ago, this is the like source of the tension between them, is that she abandoned her mom and sister. And she says it's because she went up into the attic one day and found a bunch of mom's old diaries and discovered that her dad is Billy Loomis.
Her dad is Billy Loomis, and she found this in a diary, confronted her mom about it without knowing that when she was confronting her mom about it, her dad was in the room listening. He didn't know that he wasn't her father. And then, so that night, the dad left the family. And so she's like, I'm the reason dad left. And also, my dad's a serial killer.
Holy shit. Wait, do we know either of these actors? Or were they in any of the other Scream movies?
The parents? No, I don't think so.
No, and they don't appear in this movie either. It's
they're
just
not
like,
in the movie.
Yeah, no, it's just.
Okay. Okay.
Important to Sam and Tara's backstory and relationship.
Got it.
Oh, and after also like in the before she kicks everyone out, while everyone's still like stressed of the tension of Sam having just been attacked, Amber and Richie are like yelling at each other. And Richie's like, well, where was Amber this whole time? They're just like always trying to account for people's whereabouts. And Amber's like, I was with Sheriff Judy. I was at the station. Like, I have an alibi. And like, what were you doing? You were just here watching Netflix. Like, oh, that sounds pretty fucking airtight. Like just like constantly accusing each other. But okay, so then they get the extra security at the hospital, and then that night I think they go to a bar. I don't know who all is there, but it's like the friend group.
It's the friend group. It's the teenagers. Also, after Sam tells this to Tara, Tara is like, get the fuck out.
Oh, right. Like, she's like,
Tara
pissed.
Is pissed. And she's like, you left me. You never shared this with me. She's not mad that her dad is Billy Loomis. She's mad that her sister never told her. And she was like, you were too young. I didn't want to burden you with this. And Tara's like, get the fuck out. Like, I don't need you here. But then, yes, the teenage friend group is at a bar now, all discussing like who's the killer, what is going to happen, and that fucking creep, Liv's ex boyfriend, the old not that old guy, is there, and Chad and him get into a bit of an altercation where Chad's like, "Leave her the fuck alone, like get out of here. She's not interested in you." That creep pulls out a little knife on Chad just to threaten him, and the bartender is like, "Hey, get out of the bar." And then he's outside peeing on a wall because that's what trashy guys do.
Yeah, he's peeing on the wall outside. And then headlights turn on and the song Red Right Hand starts blaring from his car, which is a song that plays in all of the Scream movies except for number 4, which people were mad about. I was very excited to hear this song. And it's also the theme song of Peaky Blinders.
Oh, I know that song.
Yeah, it's a great song. But just hearing it being played, and we realize it's his car that someone has turned on his car, turned the headlights on, and he like walks back and is yelling like, who the fuck is that? Car's empty when he gets there. He leans in to reach in to grab the keys to turn it off. He's kind of drunk and stumbling. And then he just gets stabbed in the neck real quick.
Oh,
ghost face pops up behind him and just goes pew.
Yeah, that one is quick. That one is honestly funny. Just was like
and he dies, crawls away for a bit and then dies.
Yep. So now Ghostface has actually killed one person, almost killed or tried to kill two. It's important to note that when the attack happened on Sam at the hospital and they got more security for Tara's room, they also were like, we can put her on a private floor. So Tara is still in the hospital. She got stabbed a bunch of times, has a big broken leg.
Which a private floor sounds worse.
Sounds worse.
Sounds so much worse. So much worse.
But that is what they do. So Tara is in a private floor in the hospital. Sam, meanwhile, is like, okay, we need to fucking figure out what's going on. I don't trust the sheriff. She tells Richie, in order to figure out what's going on here, we need to talk to an expert. Who do you think that expert is? The hottest guy in town.
Big guns. The big guns.
We got to go to the hottest guy in town's house. Dewey. Dewey Riley? I think that's his name.
I love that his name is Dewey. Like, what?
Officer Dewey.
What was Kevin Williamson thinking? Dewey, like, where does it come from?
I think they call him Dwight. I think it's a nickname, I think, or maybe I just misheard.
No, but it's iconic. It's perfect. It's iconic to name someone Dewey in this
Officer
context.
Dewey is really cute. But yeah, so they go, they knock on it. He lives in a trailer park. They knock on his trailer door. He is drinking alcohol in the morning and watching a morning talk show with Gail Weathers.
Okay, Sammy, for all these reasons, I would be a little more concerned that you're attracted to him.
Okay, well, I was
yeah, but just wait. Just wait. Also, I guess it's important to note he and Gail Weathers end up together
throughout the, I think they get married in, or like engaged in 3, and they've like been married in 4. But yeah, it's clear that they have since
they
split
are no
up.
Longer together. Yeah. And he doesn't look like he's doing so
which,
well.
Which this is also just a lot of meta.
Yeah, I really, when this was, and this
it was blowing my mind.
This scene was blowing my, every scene with the two of them and about the two of them was blowing my fucking mind, because how weird to be in a movie with your ex-wife talking about how you are no longer married to each other. It like is a big part of their story in this movie. And I just kept being like, what was this like?
They must be on very good terms, because
they must be on very good terms. They
would never do this if they weren't. Yeah, they would never be able to do this otherwise. Hopefully they're just good friends. That's what
I
it sounds like.
I hope they're just
like.
Good friends. Anyway, so they go to visit Officer Dewey.
He at first wants nothing to do with it. Sam says, my dad's Billy Loomis. He lets them in.
That's a trump card for sure.
It really is. I mean, you got it.
He's like, all right, come on in. Sits him down on the couch. This is just Sam and Richie. And he immediately is like, Who's Richie? How did you meet him? Does he know about your dad? It's always the boyfriend. Like, what's this guy's deal? And Richie's like, whoa, 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 man. And then like starts listing off other things. He's like, I'm just saying, like, these are the things. Like, it's that. It's always someone in your friend group. And he says 3 things. What's the 3rd thing he says? I can't remember.
It's always related to the past. That's the other one he says. It always has to do with something in the past. So like, think about the past of all these people.
Right. Like who has connections to who?
It's always connected to the original events.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that it's extremely satisfying to have a character who's doing what the audience is already doing themselves.
Oh, it's great. It's fucking great. It's so, yeah. And he's so hot.
He's so hot. And he comes in and he's like, here's how this fucking shit goes. Like, I'm not playing around. Like, we're not going to be stupid. Like, here's literally everyone you need to put at the top of your suspect list.
Yeah. He's like, does she have a friend group? And she says, yes. And he's like, great. You go there next. Like, you talk like, and she asks him for his help. And he says, no. He's like, I've been stabbed 9 times. I have permanent nerve damage. I'm not fucking doing this again. Good luck. Like, I am out. Which
fair.
I also love. Fucking fair. Are you kidding? You stabbed 9 times? Like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank
How
you.
Dare
We're
you
done.
Come to me? Like, I have done this enough. But they leave and they decide they're going to gather the friend group because that's the next point of defense. And so then Dewey then is like, he calls Sydney to be like, hey, go. It's really sweet. It's a very tender scene.
Mm-hmm.
He calls her and she answers like, oh, it's so good to hear your voice. How are you? This clearly haven't talked in a while. She asks him how she's like, he tells her, don't come back here. And she's like, I'm not. You don't need to tell me that.
She's not living in Woodsboro anymore.
She's not living in Woodsboro anymore. She has kids. She's a nice life, it seems. He asks her if she has a gun. And she says, I'm Sydney fucking Prescott. Of course I have a gun.
Boom.
Oh, damn.
Boom. And he says, OK, don't come back here. And she says, of course I'm not. And she says, Dewey, I'm really glad. Like, whatever's happening there, I'm glad they have you to protect them. She clearly doesn't know that he is obviously no longer working in the police force. And she asks if he's told Gail, and he's like, that's going to be my next call. And so hangs up, and he does not call Gail. He sends her a text, and it's a very fun scene. He sends her a text. He goes, ghost face back. Don't come here. Sends it. And then says, hope you're doing well. Smiley face. Sends it. And then he sits there and he goes, gosh, I shouldn't have sent the smiley face. Like, he immediately feels like awkward about it. It was very fun.
But so after that, he like eventually decides that he will go and help out the kids. So everyone eventually gathers at Mindy and Chad's, the twins' house, and their uncle was Randy, who is the Jamie Kennedy character who dies in Scream 2. And their mom is Martha, played by Heather Matarazzo, who is in one of the sequels. I don't remember her, but the audience had a reaction to her. So
the audience had a reaction.
So she's obviously...
Which I remember her from The Princess Diaries.
Yes.
That was my reaction. Was like, oh, that's her. But that's not why.
Exactly,
that's not why the audience was reacting. So where I feel like she has something to do with Scream.
Yes. But then in here is where we have another big, like, talk about possible motives and, again, more of the history of the Stab movies and the events that they, the real events that they have been based on. And they talk a lot about the fans being really upset about the sequels being getting worse and worse. They reference Dreddit, people on Dreddit being really rude about the sequels, which I thought was fun. There's also a line about Rian Johnson in here, like the one that was directed by the Knives Out guy was so bad, which is a reference to Rian Johnson getting a ton of shit for one of the Star Wars movies. So a lot of commentary on toxic fan culture.
And the culture of like reboots and sequels and like that nothing can just be... Nothing's dead. We're bringing everything back. The Mindy character is like clearly a super fan.
Yep.
And so she goes on this... monologue about like, oh my god, okay, what? Here, I get it. Here's what's happening. We're in the middle of a requel, is what she calls it. She's like, it's not quite a sequel, but it's not quite a reboot. It's like based on the events of the original, but with new characters and new twists. So everything. So she's like basically explaining what movie we're in, but also it, how it is tied to like who they can suspect as the killer and who is going to be the next victim. And as this scene was happening, I started to feel very out of body because I have just watched Matrix Resurrections, which does a lot of this shit, and it references the first Matrix and is like, this is the world we're in now. And they constantly talk about the Matrix as an idea in the Resurrections. And I just had this moment where I was like, is this movies now? Like, is this? I was just like, what's happening?
Wait, you know what? The only thing that I can think as you're explaining this is you're just a rat in a maze. You're just a rat in a maze.
Yeah, it's wild. But it's also very Scream to be doing this. But so she says, well, by requel logic, the most likely killer is Sam. She's like,
yep,
that would be perfect for the requel. So now they're back to like all suspecting each other. And they do say, OK, well, the victims are tied to the original people from the Stab.
They find out Vince
movies.
Is Stu's nephew, the one that died.
Vince was Stu Mocker's nephew. Billy Loomis's kid is Sam. So that so Mindy and
Chad
are Randy's. Like, fuck, our uncle was in it. So we're fucked. And they say Wes is like, well, my mom, his mom is the sheriff, by the way. Sheriff Judy. And he's like, well, my mom was involved as a sheriff. And I think Mindy's like, she wasn't a main character. You're fucking fine. So they're like trying to suss out like who the next person's going to be.
There's a part where Wes says something to Dewey, like, you know, maybe it's you. You are like past your prime, like where nobody's focusing on you anymore. And like, maybe that's making you mad or something like that. And he's like, maybe you're the killer because that cut deep.
That's so funny.
I don't know what the line is exactly leading into
it's,
but
it's something like that, but
it really
great.
Made me laugh. But Sam gets mad that eventually she is accused, and so Sam like storms off and is like, I'm not sitting through this.
Richie comes out and tries to follow her to the car and is like, the one rule is we don't split up. Like, so now we're like already in the fabric of like how this works, but she's like, fuck it, I'm out of here.
Yeah, she goes off on her own. And then we cut to Sheriff Judy at home ordering food for dinner, and the front door opens. There's a lot of little fake out moments in here. It's a very fun scene. Very
this
fun
scene is really good.
10 minutes, but the door's open. She gets scared. She immediately grabs a knife. Turns out it is her son, Wes, coming home from a run, or I guess, yeah. No, he's from a run. He's all sweaty. And she says, I'm going to go pick up dinner. He says, why didn't you Postmates it? She says, it gets all cold. We don't need to know all those details, but she tells him, you know, you go up and shower. I'll go pick up the food. So she gets in her police vehicle to go pick up some sushi. And Wes gets in the shower.
Never good.
Don't do it.
And as Judy is in the car, the phone rings and it is Ghostface, and he says, "Hello, Officer Judy."
Officer Judy. Perfect. Judy. Perfect. It's so funny. Favorite. I like spit when it happens.
Is that the best line?
Yes.
That's it. I've been saying it. Joel and I keep saying it to each other back and forth. Judy. Judy. Officer Judy.
Can you both say it again in unison? I want to hear
know
it again.
I can pull it off. Officer Judy. It's so funny. Brilliant. It's so good.
But he basically tells her, I've killed two people or something. She's like, "You've only killed one." And he's like, "Well, next time you see me, your son's going to be dead." And she realizes her son's at home alone. She whips the police car around, sends out a distress call, is running back, like, "Please don't kill my son." We're getting like shots of Wes in the shower, not paying attention to anything, not care in the world, not on edge.
Shampooing his hair like you do, just dee-dee-dee-dee. Not concerned.
Judy runs, gets home, runs up to the front door, and Ghostface pops out, stabs her right in the stomach, kills her right out front of her house in broad daylight. Wes is fine. Wes is in the shower. Nobody's in there. And Judy dies. And then we get...
Judy. Goodbye, Judy.
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 So Judy. Sad, Judy.
And we get a series of really good fake outs with Wes getting out of the shower. And you know how it's always like you open the refrigerator door and then lean in, and the audience is really anticipating someone being behind the refrigerator door when you close it. And so the music keeps like rising, like, and then he closes it. Nobody's there. It happens like four times.
It happens so many times. The whole theater is laughing every time because we're just like, God damn it. Because you also know he is there somewhere. Yes. He just keeps being like, "Not here."
But eventually the front door opens on its seemingly on its own. Wes goes to investigate, opens the door, doesn't see anything, closes it, turns around. Ghostface is there. Ghostface stabs him through the neck. We see
through the side. No. It goes in one side and out the other of his neck. Ooh, it's yucky.
We see it go right through. And then it looks like Ghostface is like pulling down also.
Oh, no.
And it's just like the camera is just centered on the knife through the neck. Like it's you can't look anywhere else.
No, you gotta look at it.
And it's for a while until we see Wes finally dies.
Oh my god, fuck. Okay.
Cops arrive because the Judy had put out a distress call. Sam sees the commotion. She's driving nearby, I guess, runs up and is like, "I know them. Are they okay?" A cop is like, "No, I'm sorry." She sees the cop that was put stationed outside of her sister's hospital room as extra like protection is there, and she's like, "If you guys are here, like, who's protecting my sister?"
And Dewey shows up there because Dewey used to be the sheriff, so he like knows him, and he's there, and he sees that Officer Judy is dead, and a news van pulls up, and it is Gail Weathers, and she immediately comes up to Dewey and hits him and is like, "A text? You sent me a fucking text?" And he's upset that she's there because he doesn't want any of them to come back to Woodsboro because he knows what that means. Also, it's clear, you know, they have a little moment where they rehash everything that happened in their relationship, which is that she had gotten a job in New York. He moved with her to New York, but couldn't hack it. He left. They split up. But then they like both start crying. They like reconcile in that moment. And
whoa.
And she's like, "Why didn't you tell me?" He was like, "I couldn't do it. I just couldn't hack it. And I've been sad every day that I made that choice. I still like watch your show every day." And she's like, "Why wouldn't you have told me that?" And they just have this moment of like, "I needed a different life than you needed. And that's just the deal." And it's like a sad but sort of sweet moment for them to say the things they never said to each other because they're confronting probably getting murdered again for the millionth time.
Yep.
But yeah, in the end, Sam is like, "Fuck, who's watching my sister? I have to go to the hospital." So she goes to get in her car. And but right before she drives off, Dewey gets in the passenger seat and he's like, "I'm coming with you."
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the hospital.
And she's realizing she like might not get there in time. So she calls Richie too. I think she's like calling all of the friends, maybe just being like, who can get to Tara fastest? Like she's alone. And we see Tara alone on her own private hospital floor.
So crazy.
Jesus
Such
Christ.
Such a bad idea.
Watching Dawson's Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fun.
That is fun.
That's realistic.
She starts hearing noises.
So power goes out.
Power goes out. She starts getting scared. And it's kind of fun. She's like hooked up to the heart rate monitor and you start hearing her heart rate get faster and faster. And then she's like, fuck this, pulls out the cords and rolls a little wheelchair over next to her bed and hoists herself into this wheelchair.
But she's in so much pain because she's been stabbed 7 times and she got stabbed through her hand and she has to like wheel. Oh, it's so brutal.
And we start seeing blood seeping through like her bandages as she's she's clearly like ripping stitches and stuff just by moving. Like she should not be moving.
No, but she's fucking dead. No matter. Yeah. It's like, there's nowhere she could go. Like, how could she get away? But
she's at least trying. And
she's at least trying.
Whoever made that call to put her on the private floor, they can just go fuck themselves.
So she starts wheeling herself out of her room. As she starts wheeling herself down the hall, she sees that the security guard at the desk and on her floor has been brutally killed and is bleeding out on the floor.
Yep.
She manages to get herself into another empty room and shuts the door a crack, but then the door gets opened. Again, it's very dark. She grabs one of those like IV rolling pole things, you know, whacks the person with it. But it's Richie, right?
It's Richie. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, I'm here. Like, are you okay? And then very quickly, Ghostface pops up, slices Richie.
No.
And I think also punches him.
Yeah, like push it. So he gets knocked out a bit.
He gets knocked out. So Richie collapses. Tara darts for the door the other direction. She's like going toward the elevator. And then does Ghostface call Sam or does Sam...
Ghostface call... No, I think Sam is calling Tara's phone.
That's right.
And Ghostface picks it up and he's like, hi, Sam.
Yeah.
And then he says, all right, Sam, I could kill either Tara or Richie. You choose. You tell me who to save. I'm about to kill one of them. And she's like, please, please, no. And she won't say it. She won't say, like, kill Richie, kill Tara. She's just like, please, 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 don't hurt her, don't hurt her. And he's like, oh, come on, Sam. It's so easy. Just make a choice. Like, only one of them's going to die, but you have to tell me which one it's going to be.
And she's like, am I stupid or am I just stalling for time? Elevator doors open. Dewey and Sam are there. Dewey shoots Ghostface a bunch of times in the chest. Ghostface stumbles back into like a glass case thing, falls and collapses. They get Richie and Tara and they all like run into the elevator without
they don't
trying to
Ghostface.
Unmask Ghostface.
I couldn't believe it. You gotta, but I mean, granted, they're just trying to get away, but it's also like, pull that fucking mask off.
Yeah.
But they don't.
They all run into the elevator and then Dewey says, the head, you gotta shoot the head. The killer always comes back unless you shoot him in the head. He turns back. Sam's like, who fucking cares? Like, come on, let's go. Let's get out of here. Dewey says, no, I gotta do this. They go down in the elevator. Dewey goes back, reloads his gun and goes to... like raising the gun to shoot Ghostface in the head. Then his phone rings and it's Gail. Ghostface pops back alive, stabs Dewey from the front and the back.
Yeah.
And then lifts him with both blades, like completely slicing up his like insides and back. It's gnarly. And
it's
says,
so sad.
It's an honor.
Oh, okay.
And kills Dewey, and it's really sad. I almost
kills
cried.
Dewey, and it's so Dewey. Sad, and we're really sad about it.
No, he survived so many times,
but not this one.
I knew one of them was going to die.
It had to be.
Yeah.
And so Dewey dies.
And he just had that like cathartic end of relationship talk with Courtney Cox.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then downstairs in the entryway to the hospital, Gail approaches sobbing. She sees them pulling out Dewey's, you know, in the body bag. And then guess who shows up? Sydney fucking Prescott, because she found out that Dewey died and she had to show up. And so she and Gail have a moment. Tara and Sam sort of reconcile because the last time they talked, Tara was like, fuck you, get out of here. But they have another moment where Tara's like, I don't blame you. I just wish you hadn't left me. And Sam's like, I'll never leave you again. And Sam says, okay, we are getting out of Woodsboro. Like, you're not staying in this hospital. If somebody has, we just have to get out of this fucking town. So she and Richie and Tara go to leave the hospital. But as they're leaving the hospital, they run into Gail and Sydney. Gail and Sydney are like, we know how this goes. You can't run. We want to end this. We will help you. And Sam's like, so let me get this straight. You, a TV host and you, Sydney Prescott, want me to commit murder with you. And they're like, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Sydney's like, I have kids. I'm not sleeping until this person is in the ground. Like, I'm connected to all this shit all the time. This affects me too. Like, I'm not sleeping until this guy's dead.
And Sam says, no, I'm getting out of town. I'm just leaving. And Sydney's like, it doesn't work that, like, you can't. Don't you think we've tried? You can't just leave. And Sam's like, nope, sorry. I got to keep my sister safe. Like, we're fucking out of here. So they leave. Gail and Sydney are standing there and they're like, well, fuck. Like, Gail's like, that didn't go well. And Sydney's like, it's okay. I put a tracker on her car. Let's follow her. And they're like, oh, okay. Hell yeah.
There's some point where, like, or throughout the movie, we're getting like little flashes of Skeet, Billy Loomis. And there's like a part in which he's giving her, like, Sam a pep talk kind of thing where he's like, you're like my daughter. Like, you shouldn't be afraid. Like, you have this in you too. Like, you have a murderous, like, rage inside of you too.
Yeah.
Like, tap into that. And she's like, I'm nothing like you. Like, there's that kind of back and forth going on between her and her hallucination of Billy.
That, like, and I work, like, that's what her medication that she's taking is presumably for, is like the visions that she has of her serial killer dad. Very Riverdale. You love to see
it. Very Riverdale.
But earlier in the movie, we established that Tara has asthma and needs her inhaler. Mm-hmm. So Richie and Sam and Tara are driving out of town, unbeknownst to them, being followed by Sydney and Gail. But Tara is looking in her bag and it's like, fuck, I don't have my inhaler. Like, I need my inhaler, or I need it. And Richie's like, fuck no. Like, we'll get a new inhaler when we, like, get to the next town. And she's like, I can't get it without a prescription. Like, I have an extra one at Amber's house. It's on the way. Can we just stop at Amber's house and get my inhaler? And Sam's like, yep, we got to do it. And Richie's like, fuck no. Like, are you kidding me? No, we have to get out of this fucking town. But eventually Sam's like, it'll be quick. She needs it. Like, let's just do it. So we cut to Amber's house where she's having a party for their friend who got murdered. It's like a
memorial.
And they're like all doing shots and like are having a party. This house looks very familiar to us. It is the house of the events of the first movie, but they don't know this.
Oh, okay. Wait. So I thought that in the beginning, Tara was also in the first house.
She was.
So they use the same houses.
Same houses. Yep. Same town, same houses.
Yeah.
Which is also a fun thing for the fans.
Got it.
So as they pull up to get the inhaler, Amber is like, oh, okay, everybody leave. Party's over.
Yeah, because Sydney and Gail call Sam and they see the address of where they're stopping at and they're like, fuck, 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 fuck. They call and they're like, you got to get out of there. That's where this all happened before. Like,
you're
the killer is recreating the events of the first movie. They like are calling. They got you there. That's where they want you to be. And so they all start panicking and Amber and Richie are like, okay, everybody out, everybody out.
It's a very fun scene where they're like, not none of the teens want to leave. You're like, no, we're having a party. And so Richie like turns the lights on. He's like, okay, Gen Z, get out. I'm saving your lives. Get the fuck out. I know. And somebody calls him like Tara's dad. They're like, Tara's dad's ending the party. just how teens view someone who's fucking 30 years old.
It's really funny.
Which is very fun. But so, yeah, all the teens start leaving.
Kind of the core friend group stays.
There's a fun moment earlier in the movie. Liv and Chad, who are dating, it gets established that they haven't had sex yet. And I don't know, nothing like, mourning your friend's death to get you super horny. So they're making out on the couch and Liv's like, okay, I'm like ready. Let's do it. Let's do it now. Let's go upstairs and have sex. And Chad's like, I'm not saying I think you're the killer, but I don't know that you're not. So like, I don't think it's safe for me to go upstairs. We should probably stay where all the people are. And she gets really pissed, as you would. She's like, you think I'm a fucking murderer? Like, fuck you.
Storms
she leaves.
Out.
But he's like, ah, oh, fuck, I should go try to find her. Like, she's probably mad at me for accusing her of being a murderer. So that's also happening. Meanwhile, the Richie, Sam, and Tara have like split up inside the house to try to find the inhaler.
Mm.
And we see Chad going outside. And there was also a thing earlier where Liv was trying to get Chad was trying to get Liv to accept something on the phone that's basically like a tracker, like a Find My Phone app, so you can always see where your friends are type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she always thought it was creepy and like, that's like a stalker boyfriend thing, like, I'm not doing that. But as he's walking out to try to find her because he's upset her, it says she's accepted it. And so he can now see where her phone is, and he's following it into the darkness, into dark bushes. And we're like, okay, Chad,
come on, buddy.
And sure enough, he eventually gets attacked by Ghostface. And he gets stabbed and then starts running, but now knows Ghostface has Liv's phone. And so he's like running and realizes that he's being tracked now, that Ghostface can see where he is because of his phone. He eventually tosses his phone far away and like makes a run for it, but Ghostface gets him, pins him down. We don't see what happens, but he definitely gets stabbed.
Oh, yeah. You hate to see it. Should have decided to have sex.
Yeah, sex would have been the safer.
Sex would have been, yeah, they would have been fine if they just had sex.
In the house, Richie's looking for beer. There's like a fun scene where Amber goes down into the basement alone, and Mindy like a jump scare is like also down there, and they have like a little face off of like, why didn't you ask someone to come down to the basement with you? Like, don't you know that that's like a rule, is you shouldn't be by yourself? And Amber's like, well, how do you know I'm not the killer? And Mindy's like, because I am. And then Amber's like, I don't know, there's like a fun little face off, and she's like, no, I'm not, I'm just kidding. But like, you got to be safer than that. You got to be making smarter
like,
choices.
This is what it would have felt like, you know.
Yeah.
Mindy's the one who's like the Jamie Kennedy character, basically, who's like, I know, yes, how this fucking goes. Like, you guys got to be safer. You're gonna get killed. This person's gonna get killed. Like when her brother goes off to find the girlfriend, she's like, you shouldn't fucking do that. But like, okay, yeah, man. Then Liv comes back in and is like pissed. And then Mindy's like, wait, where's Chad? And Liv's like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm trying to get my fucking Uber and it won't come. And Mindy's like, Chad went out to find you. Where the fuck is he? And then, so then she starts suspecting Liv of being the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so now that all of them are like really suspecting each other. Now the numbers are whittling down. So they're like, it's obviously one of us who has survived this. But yeah, then at one point, which this is the point at which I was like, Richie, what the fuck are you doing? Richie's like, when they get to Amber's house, Richie's like, we shouldn't be here. This is a mistake. The fucking murder's going to come here. But then he's like, do you have any beer? And it's like, dude, now you want to have a beer? Like, all of a sudden you're fucking chill and ready to have a beer?
And Mindy's like, there's more in the basement. And he's like, well, will you come with me? And she's like, no, but you were right to ask.
Yeah. But so he does go down into the basement to get beer.
At some point, Mindy's like watching the movie by herself. She's like the only one left.
That's when he goes down to get the beer.
Yeah. And she's watching it by herself. And it's the scene in the movie where the Jamie Kennedy character is watching the movie on the TV and
on
is like
same couch.
On the same couch, and is like, look behind you. And she's watching him watching this thing, and she's like yelling at him, watch behind you, because the killer's coming up behind him behind the couch, and we're seeing the killer come behind her on the couch. So it's just like movie within a movie with the same thing happening on every it's very fun. But Mindy gets attacked, gets stabbed, and Sam runs in, I think, at that moment, and is able to like fight off Ghostface. But then everybody like walks in.
Yeah, pretty much at this point, like Ghostface gets pushed away. Everybody converges in the living because of the commotion that's happening. So the people who end up, Richie comes back up the stairs with the beer, and they're like, she's like, where the fuck were you? And he's like, I was getting beer. Mindy's like wounded but not dead. And so it's Mindy, Richie, Sam, Tara. Maybe Tara's upstairs, like looking for her inhaler, maybe.
Yep.
Amber and Liv. are then all in the living room. They've just survived this attack. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck? They start arguing about, like, where were you? Where were you? Minnie just got attacked. Who the fuck is the killer? Mm-hmm. And they start direct, like, someone says something about Liv. They're like, Liv, you, where the fuck have you been? Like, and Liv, like, holds up her hands. She's like,
she has blood on her hands.
She has blood on her hands.
Because she just found Chad. And they're like, you just found Chad?
Why do you have blood on your hands? What do you mean you found him? Maybe you fucking killed him. And she holds her hands, but she's like, I'm not the killer. And Amber goes, you're right, I am. Shoots her in the head.
What?
So then everyone chaos ensues. Scatters. They all split.
Everyone runs.
Richie and Sam end up down in the basement.
Right.
And that's when Richie's like,
I think the second killer might be Tara. You guys are estranged.
He's like, I've been watching stab movies. There are always two killers. Like, we know one of them's Amber, but I think the other one might be Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys are estranged. How well do you know her? She holds up a knife to him. She's like, how well do I know you? And he's like, whoa, like, Sam, put the knife down. Like, holy shit.
Sydney and Gail pull up and Amber is like out front screaming, like acting like she's wounded. And Gail and Sydney kind of look at each other like, what do you think? Like, is this for real? And they're not really buying Amber's performance. But and then Amber's just like, ah, fuck it. Pulls the gun out again, shoots Gail in the stomach. Gail collapses. Sydney runs in the house, runs after her. Sydney's got a gun. And we don't see where Amber goes. It looks like the house is empty. Sydney yells, anybody come out right now, ghost face or not, I'm just going to start shooting. Like, I'm going to be shooting everywhere. So anyone who doesn't want to get shot, like, get the fuck out of where you're hiding.
Come out.
Yeah.
And she just starts shooting through closed doors. Every closed door she walks up to, she shoots through it.
Holy shit.
We see that Sam has managed to go upstairs looking for Tara, and she finds Tara in a closet with her mouth taped up and her hands duct taped, and she goes to like undo the duct tape, and we see her pause and hesitate and have a moment of like, fuck, is this a trap? Is it Tara? Who's the killer? We don't see what happens there. Meanwhile, we continue to see Sydney shooting through doorways. She shoots through a doorway, shoots Richie in the leg. He's like, oh, fuck. And she opens the door. She's like, why didn't you come out? And he's like, you have a fucking gun. I'm not coming out.
And then Ghostface appears and attacks Sydney, and they're like fighting and tumble down the stairs. The mask comes off. We see that this is Amber, the Amber Ghostface, and they're all pretty injured at this point. I feel like everyone's like
been
either
stabbed,
been shot or stabbed or fallen down the stairs. Like, they're like not at their best. And so the gun has fallen away, and Sam runs down, I think, also, and is like, get the gun, get the gun. Sydney and Amber are on the first floor. Richie's like running down from the second floor,
but he's been stabbed in the leg, so it's like moving slowly.
Shot in the leg. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Shot in the leg by, and he's been stabbed at some point too, I think.
Sam runs in, I think, to this scene, and mm-hmm. Sydney and I think Amber are both kind of like out of commission. They're both kind of knocked down.
Yeah,
and Richie,
they've like attacked
like,
each other.
Richie like sees Sam and is like, oh my God, Sam runs up. I'm so glad you're okay. Stabs her. Because I wanted to be the one to kill you.
Oh my God.
Fooled us all.
Oh, he really did.
He got us good.
It's such a fun reveal. Oh, it's why I love screening movies. I like love this moment. Also, I just for us personally, I was fucking thrilled.
We had the killer on last
that it
week.
Was Jack.
Oh my God, it was the fucking killer.
He's a
Jack,
fucking
you
killer.
Sneaky.
Sneaky.
You sneaky,
sneaky monkey.
Motherfucker. Are you a sneaky monkey?
Sneaky monkey.
Oh my God. I so didn't see it coming that I should have seen it coming. You know what I mean? It's always the person that you like suspect
exactly.
least that ends up being.
Well, and then he says, so they drag them like into the kit. Gail Weathers comes back in. She manages to sell herself in. And so Amber and Richie now drag all of them into the kitchen. The three, they've got Sam, Gail, and Sydney, all very injured, very much not doing okay. And they sort of reveal their whole, actually, in fact, Richie reveals. He gets the fun end of the movie, fucking killer monologue. We love
oh,
to see
yeah.
it. Fucking love to
Jack,
see it. And he reveals that he and Amber are a couple. They met on a stab subreddit internet fandom group.
Subreddit.
they are both super fans of the Stab movies, and they conceived of this whole plot because they want a new Stab movie that is fucking good to come out. So they're like, we're gonna tell them what to do. So much easier than writing a script. We're gonna just create this next scene that will become the next Stab movie. And their whole goal was to get Sydney and Gail back into town, and like they knew that they could get Sam back. And oh, Richie says like it was easy to find you. It was really easy to find you in Modesto. I think Sam asked like, how did you know that I was Billy's daughter? And Amber's like, it's a small town. It's not that hard to fucking figure secrets
they're
out.
They're like, your mom is a drunk that just blabs about shit. So apparently yeah, the mom like, had
been like,
that wasn't
fucking hard.
Yeah.
Telling people.
And
okay.
then Richie's like, yeah. And then it wasn't very hard to find you in Modesto. And it was even easier to fuck you. Just like,
evil.
Brutal.
Nasty. Richie.
Meanie sneaky monkey. And so they're very excited.
They say that they're going to pin it all on Sam because that's a story. Daughter of a serial killer, like coming into her own as her own serial killer. Like that's a good return to form.
And she wants to kill Sydney because Sydney killed her dad in the first one.
They're like, it all makes sense. That'll be good.
So they're in the exact same kitchen that fucking the original one ends in where they're trying to pin it on Sydney. So they're like, all right, here we go. Time to stage the bodies. And so Richie says to Amber, he's like, go get Tara, who they've tied up in the closet.
Yeah. And there's a part where he's even like, I convinced you so well to even doubt your own sister. Like, I got you so good. Mm-hmm. And then Amber yells out, Tara's not here. And Sam says, maybe you're not as convincing as you think. This is also the fun part about Scream movies is this little like
the twist within the twist within the twist.
Well, it's just like this like yes. control, like who's got the upper hand. It keeps changing and it's very fun.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's like Sam says, oh, yeah, you're not as convincing as you think. And Tara jumps out and she's untied and she's like whacks Richie in the head with a crutch, her crutch, and starts like beating yeah. Richie up. So now Richie's out of commission with Tara. So Gail manages to get a gun or a knife or something and shoot Amber, who has, yeah, in the kitchen mistakenly turned on the stove. Oh, no, I think either Sydney beats Amber in the head and breaks a bottle of hand sanitizer on her head.
Oh, that part's so funny.
And Gail has a line that's like, fucking hand sanitizer? But they're just like grabbing anything they can.
I thought Amber said it. Like, are you kidding me?
Maybe somebody said it.
It's fun.
But then Amber falls onto the stove, which she has turned on. She's covered in hand sanizer.
So yeah, she lights up.
Right.
Which is very fun because this actress also gets lit up by a flamethrower in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So now this is two movies where this girl has been fucking burned alive. Pretty fun.
She collapses. I think Richie like regains consciousness and is cornering Sam. It's just him and Sam. Everyone else is like preoccupied in the other room. And he's advancing on her. She's on her back, like crawling away from him. And he's walking towards her, being all menacing, saying more things of his master plan. And like, I don't know. And she spots a knife kind of hidden behind a curtain in the room. So she's crawling towards it. And then in a mirror sees Skeet again. And Skeet just like gives her a little nod.
You know what you gotta do,
remember what I said. And I can't remember Richie's line that like leads into this, but Richie says something to her like, the you know, the number one rule is you gotta tie it back to the original or something like that. And she says, I'm gonna make a new rule, and it's don't fuck with the daughter of a serial killer. She grabs the knife and stabs him through both cheeks. The knife goes like through his cheeks. He falls backwards. She gets on top of him and she goes to town. She stabs him so many times.
She's stabbing him over and over and blood is squirting. She's getting covered in blood. She's like way more than is necessary. She just fucking turns him into a pin cushion. It's just like,
and her eyes, her performance is really good in this moment because she is just like dead behind the eyes. It's a really chilling scene, but it's these scenes in horror movies that like make me question my own psyche, because it's like, I love this. And it's that moment of, yeah, just like revenge, but like such intense violence. But it's just like this fucking breaking point, and it's really satisfying to see. But it, yes, it is that thing that's like, okay, like, why do I like this so much?
Yeah. It's like, really, there's something.
Should I be nervous that I fucking love this?
It's really satisfying.
But yeah, so she stabs him, kills the hell out of him.
And this was some trivia we got from Jack, is that he gets stabbed 23 times in that scene. It's a lot.
23!
That's a lot of fucking times. So that's, yeah, you're watching her stab him 23 times. That's a long time.
Forcefully.
He's still not dead. He's like blood coming out of his mouth. And he's like, like trying to talk through. And
this is what I hate. This is what I hate most about being stabbed, is that it takes a long time to die if it's happening in the right way. Yeah. And I do not like that.
And so he's like choking on his own blood. Another trivia we got is that the way he did this performance is that he shoved sponges in his mouth so that it sounds like he's talking like as if he has holes in his cheeks. And he says to her, "But what about my ending?" And she says, "Here it comes." And she takes the knife and slices his throat, cuts his throat. And then, yeah, then Gail and Sydney and Tara come in and say, they always come back. There's always one more little fake out. And Sam just snatches the gun from Sydney's hand, shoots him a bunch also. And just like, we don't think he's coming back.
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
But then Amber, half burned, comes into the room.
No, Amber comes in.
And then they shoot her in the head and she dies.
Okay.
Just one last little like, and then shoot her and she dies. Then we see we're outside of the house. Ambulances have converged. News crews, very similar to the ending of the first one. We see that both Mindy and Chad have survived. They're like in stretchers.
It's
and they
cute.
Sort of
they give each other a thumbs up.
Wave to each other. They're like, hey, we did it.
Good job.
We have a nice moment with Sam and Gail and Sydney, where Sam's like, thank you so much for helping me. She asks Sydney, like, can I ask you a weird question? Am I going to be okay? Because, you know, the exact same thing happened to her. Her boyfriend ended up being a serial killer.
Yeah.
And she's like, eventually you will. Gail says, I'm not going to ever write this story. Those fuckers can die in anonymity. Maybe I'll write a book about a nice sheriff who was a good man.
Thank you, Gail. We appreciate that. Stop the cycle of violence, Gail.
And they go to Tara's in the back of an ambulance. She goes to leave. And she's like, wait, Sam, come in. And so Sam comes in and holds her hand. She's like, I'm never going to leave your side. They drive away in an ambulance. We pull back on the house where another reporter is giving the same sort of spiel that Gail was at the end of the first movie. Of like, I'm outside a house where 25 years ago, the horrific scene took place. And again tonight, another whatever. So then we fade up. The screen goes black. We see the words "for Wes."
Aww.
With some birds chirping, which I read is because he was an avid bird watcher, which is just very sweet.
Oh, that's nice.
Rest in peace, Wes Craven. It's nice. I mean, it's very funny to also have a character named Wes in it get like brutally murdered, and then everyone like drunkenly
doing
like being like, "Yeah,
for
Wes." But it is sweet, a nice tribute. I think he would have been pleased with this film.
I think he would have been pleased. It's really super fun. One thing you've got to mention is in part of the monologue that Richie gives at the end is like, he's like, Dewey fucking called it right away. He said I thought I was had. He was like, he's the boyfriend. And we didn't even fucking know. Like, it's great. It's so fun how many times they're like, I mean, this was so obvious.
I will say that I did guess Richie before, because there is a moment that's a tell. And I'm sure in a rewatch you would see more tells. But when Dewey shoots Ghostface a bunch in the hospital, there's a reaction shot from Richie where he looks not scared, but concerned for Ghostface. And I was like, oh, it's him. And so that was the moment I knew. And then other people knew. I was in the Reddit threads about it.
The Reddit threads.
And a lot of people said they figured it out when Amber and Richie are the ones being like, everybody get out of the house, because it's like, really it makes more sense to have more people be there.
Okay, that makes sense. And obviously the biggest tell is when he's trying to convince her that Tara is one of the killers.
Well, but like, I kind of, at that point, I was also suspicious of Tara. So that was actually...
Because she brought them all back to Amber's house because of the inhaler. Mm-hmm. You're like, really, Tara? Do you really need your inhaler that badly?
Oh, Richie also reveals when they're in the house that he, once he reveals that he's the killer, he pulls the inhaler out. And he was like, this was so easy. He's like, I can't believe this worked. All I had to do was hide your inhaler. But I, and I will say, I knew, this is another thing we talked about after the movie, was like, I knew it wasn't Tara when she like sees her in the closet and she debates whether or not she's going to untie her. I was like, she is going to untie her. That's going to be the thing that saves them. But that's what I love about these movies is like, even when you see it coming, it fucking rules. Like, it's just so fun to get to that reveal.
Yeah. That's why, I mean, I read a lot of murder mysteries too. And I just feel like it's, I love guessing and I'm pretty much always wrong. Even though it follows a pretty normal formula.
I want to rewatch to see that like moment, because that's a very cool acting choice too, to like give that little bit where like if you're not paying attention, you miss it. But like, you have to, you know, I don't know. So good job, Jack.
Good job, Jack.
You really got us.
Good job, everybody. Truly, everyone was really great in
Everyone's
it. I thought
so
the casting was great. Another thing that I guess... just some little, what do you call, Easter eggs, is that there's like a YouTube video that plays somewhere that says like Kirby's something's reaction, and Kirby is Hayden Panettiere's character in Scream 4, who her, it doesn't like show if she lives or dies. So it was like confirmation that she did live. I don't know if there will be additional sequels, but people were like really excited, like, oh, Kirby could come back.
And another bit of trivia that Jack gave us is that, different cast members had different versions of the script where different people were the killer. So there was a bit between them of not knowing. So they were all also trying to figure out who actually was playing the killer, which I would imagine must have been really fun for the actors actually playing the killer, being like, it's me. They don't know. And yeah, he just said they all really loved each other and they had a great time making it, which I feel like you can tell because it really is a very fun, very fun movie.
God, fucking cool. I can't believe that we had the killer on our goddamn podcast.
The fucking killer.
I know.
Jack. And we never would have guessed it. You guys, also, I just want to say...
our first murderer on the podcast.
Shout out to you guys. I think you did a fucking awesome job recapping that. I was like on the edge of my seat the whole time. And really hard, as you mentioned, really hard to do it when you've seen it in the theater and you can't really like take notes or watch it again. So
yeah,
hell yeah.
I will be watching it again.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see it again.
It's going to be super. It's like, that's another thing about the Scream movies, is they're really fun to rewatch because then you're like looking for the thing that you know is going to happen.
It made me want to rewatch all of them. I think these movies are so fun. The original Scream is one of my top five horror movies of all time. I just think they're so great.
It felt so true to the first Scream. Like, it felt like it felt like a true, honest to goodness Scream movie, and it felt like the 2022 version of it. Like, I was really pleased that it incorporated technology, like the things that you would do nowadays, which is like a find my phone, automated door locking, being able to Google the answers to the fucking trivia questions that the killer is asking you, and that it was a bit more brutal and gnarly and like just, I don't know, I've thought it was just so well done, and I just really had a very good time. And it seemed like everybody in our theater agreed. So congrats
to everybody involved. You did it. Great job.
You freaking did it.
And listeners, go see it if you're now armed with the knowledge that you need. It's worth it. It's really fun.
Go see it.
And I think we know what voice we have.
I think we know.
Absolutely.
How do we all feel about our Ghostface voices?
Judy.
From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Goodbye, Judy.
Goodbye,
Judy. Officer Judy.
Thank you, my friends, for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you had fun hanging with us, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast. And if you're interested in things like bonus episodes, video trailer reactions, and other cool content, head on over to patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. All right. We love you all forever and ever, starting a while ago and continuing into eternity. Adios.